Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark.
Right. Who is this really?
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Welcome to issue 94 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that still doesn't know what a cubit is. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm Dave McVeigh.
And we're a man down today. But in this issue, every Spider-Man gathers together for a major event while Batman gets ready for a birthday party. Then the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles make their trailer debut and Megan Fox wears a yellow jacket. Also, all new Ghost Rider, Silver Surfer, Iron Patriot and more in what we've been reading. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Noah, by Darren Aronofsky, Ari Handel and Nico Henrichsen. Now a major motion picture from Paramount. This is Behind the Panels.
I could keep listening to that for ages.
For 40 days and 40 nights even. What do you reckon?
Maybe. You know, so it's like that old thing, what song would you take if you were on a desert island? Well, yeah. Or in a rainstorm.
Let's hope you had a good umbrella. That was Travis, of course. Bit of a flashback there, a little blast from the past, if you will. Of course, we are doing Noah this week. We will be doing the comic book Noah, which we'll talk about a bit more in a minute, but it was something that director Darren Aronofsky put together when he was trying to get funding for the film, which is out this week in cinemas around the world. So this show will be a little bit interesting because of the way that the book was put together as part of that filmmaking process. We will be talking about the comic book, of course, a lot. That'll be our primary focus, but we will have to talk about the film a bit.
There's going to be, I mean, it's inevitable. You can't not talk about the film because, I mean, they kind of are interlinked in their own
right.
And
a good, you know, 70% of this comic made it to the screen.
And
as well.
The rest of it should have made it to the screen. But that's beside the
other 30% would have made it a good film.
Whoa. Yeah. More on that later. But now, let's address the elephant in the room. Or the lack of David Longo.
Yeah, look, David Longo, how do I put this? He received a vision from the creator. And he's currently putting together an arc up in the north shores of Sydney, I think.
Who is this really? No, David Longo is not feeling very well, so he can't join us today. But he will be back next week with all luck. So.
And we're sorry to all the people who just listened to the show just for Dave Longo.
Yeah, well, there is that. But it's kind of like old school, isn't it?
I was going to say, it's old school.
It's old school. Just you and me, babe.
Back here with the old mixer because the new one's being a pain.
Well, we won't go into that. We're recording this also very late at night because we were supposed to be recording 2 hours ago, but we've been having mixer issues.
And I've barely slept. So this is going to rock and roll.
It's going to be a very interesting show. So we'll kick through this. And for the just to keep people informed, there is no GMC this week. But next week, we're back with Cap.
Oh, yes.
We're coming
that's
back
right.
with Captain America.
That's
so.
Right. There's a movie coming out.
What am I saying? The movie
panels will be
panels.
Panels will be.
Cap.
Yeah, that's right.
We were actually going to talk about the film Noah on GMC. But
that's right. And anything else we've seen between now and
anything else we've seen between that, we'll see how we go with that. We may Noah ourselves out tonight.
For those of you who don't know, that we do have another show, Geek Movie Club. Look that up on iTunes if you don't listen to that. But we think a lot of you who listen to the show regularly know about that one. Yeah. But Noah. That one.
I saw what you did there.
Yeah. I'm trying to turn it into a positive and make it a yes-er.
A yes-er.
let's say we do a vintage clip of the week, yeah?
Why not?
Countless fathoms below the sea, in the fabled city of Atlantis, there is great rejoicing. For within the Palace Royal, Prince Namor, mighty submariner, sits at last upon the golden throne. Music and laughter is heard throughout the land. Until...
Leave me alive!
Minutes later, a ghostly quiet falls over the stricken city, and as the wounded and bewildered citizens stagger back, their troubled monarch inspects the damage.
I know that only the humans can be responsible for such carnage, conducting their accursed underwater tests. Only I can put a stop to this.
Moments later, within the Royal Council Room,
I must return to the surface world and order them to cease these mad experiments.
But, sire, the human race has ever tried to slay thee.
How speaks the Grand Vizier, my Lord Vashti?
The decision must be Namor's alone to make.
We beg your majesty, do not go.
If I ignore this challenge, I am not worthy to possess the sacred trident of Neptune. Thus it shall be, Imperius Rex.
The Grand Vizier?
It was the Grand Vizier.
Oh, okay.
Who was sitting on the golden throne. That was, of course, for the Namor cartoon in the 1960s, which I chose basically at the last minute because I couldn't think.
It's water?
About 10 minutes before you picked me up, I still hadn't chosen the vintage clip of the week, so I chose that because of the water. A lot of parallels between that story there. Someone trying to warn them of a thing that didn't happen.
And the humans causing problems.
Just made me realize that Russell Crowe basically played Jor-El in Noah, or Noah in
well,
Man
yeah,
of Steel.
Well, yeah, Russell Crowe basically plays the same thing in everything, doesn't he?
That's true.
Yeah.
Everything's going to fall apart, and I don't want to warn you about it. But
and then he drinks heavily and falls
yeah,
asleep.
No, there's that whole sequence where he's just a hologram for most of Noah. right, so have you been, Dave?
I've been good. I'm way tired tonight, but I'm good.
But we're faring better than Dave Longo, and our thoughts go out to our good friend David Anthony Longo. So
makes it sound like he's dead. He's just not feeling well.
We're dedicating this show to you. We hope you feel better soon, sir, and it's not the same show without you.
And we'll be texting you after the show, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, let's face it, we'll be sexting him after the
show.
Well,
there is that, yeah.
Do you want to talk about what we've been reading?
Yes, please.
Before my voice goes completely.
Do we remind people? This is very late.
This is very late, but let's hit this button and see if it still does what I remember it doing.
Okay.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
We read between quite a few lines this week.
I read a few things. I didn't read all of those things.
No.
But I did read a few of them.
To be fair, neither did I. But apart from reading Noah.
Because I should point out that I am actually working my way through Captain America the Winter Soldier at the moment.
Which we did last week. Yeah.
Because I'm trying to get myself up to speed for the book.
We should say,
for the movie. Sorry.
As we're recording it, this time tomorrow, you will have seen it.
I will have finally seen it. So if I have missed a few of the new ones, I will catch up with them. I'm going to the old ones at the moment.
And the next thing I've got to do after Superior Spider-Man came out this week, which had a bit of a big twist ending from what I understand, which I know about now, but I've now got to catch up on all the issues that I've missed.
I'm up to issue 7 in Superior Spider-Man. I actually stopped after the first 4 or something like that. I stopped because I was so angry at the book and people. When I found out that they're planning on bringing Parker back, I said, okay, now it's time to start reading it again. My thoughts on that very quickly are that it's actually a really well-written book. Slott is actually a really good writer. We were just very mad at him.
Yeah. Because we knew Parker would come back, I don't think it was him that we should have been mad at. It's Marvel.
It was Marvel. And now that we know that that is the ultimate conclusion, we can enjoy the book for what it is, which is just a really well-written story. It's really interesting seeing Spider-Man through the eyes of Dr. Octopus.
I mean,
it's a very interesting idea.
It's really really great deconstructing the spider world in
that
way.
Pretty much.
But some of the new books that came out, because the all-new Marvel Now books, I think the last couple of them are rolling out this month and next. Mm. So we had this week all-new Ghost Rider.
I did read that.
Which is an interesting take, because I'd read a bit of the previous Ghost Rider run, which was a different Ghost Rider to the original Ghost Rider. They've gone through several ones.
They've
now
gone through. The days of Johnny Blaze are
long gone.
The last Ghost Rider was the girl, which I can't remember. And Johnny Blaze was actually hired by the devil to come in and train her.
That's right.
Because he'd long since lost the mantle. Now, I really did like the original Ghost Rider. I was a big Johnny Blaze fan and so forth back in the 80s. And I thought it was
Nicolas Cage.
I wasn't a big fan of Nicolas Cage, but, whatever. But this was an interesting take. As long as you just like ditch your preconceptions of what Ghost Rider is. This is like, and it's really the art style I found fascinating because the art style looks like a 70s cartoon.
Yes, very much so.
With its kind of angular faces and long
legs.
A little bit of a
Japanese influence.
And a little bit of a Japanese influence to it as well. And it is a first issue. It is a discovery issue where basically we're finding out how he became who he is and so forth. But I didn't mind it. I thought it was actually okay. I'll put it this way. I'm curious enough that I want to read the next few issues to see where it's going. If I had any criticism of this issue, it would be that I felt that the last page was a little rushed.
Yeah, it did, because I think they wanted to get it to a certain point.
Yeah.
I did find that the last couple of pages were a bit rushed. That's Trad Moore as the artist. This one's written by Philippe Smith.
Right.
So I really like the art style. I definitely want to read it. We should point out this is Ghost Rider's now got a hot rod car.
Yeah, it's like he's driving a
big
muscle
American
car.
Muscle car, yeah. Which Americans love their muscle cars in
they
ways
do.
That the
although
rest
we
of the
saw
world,
a Charger on the road tonight.
We did. It was a GT.
Beautiful old muscle car. Beautifully restored, too. It was just chugging away down the road.
It certainly beat us out off the gates at the traffic lights.
Yes.
Yeah. Weren't going to be doing any drag races with that one, nor would I do any drag races with Silver Surfer.
Now, I didn't get to this. This is definitely on my reading list, and I do want to read this. So
well, speaking of Dan Slott, this is Dan Slott.
Yep.
And Mike Allred, who, I adore.
Yep.
And I think it's a really good mix. It's a really good fit having Mike Allred doing the art for this. It's a really interesting story because they've got these parallel stories running throughout this first issue of these twins who grew up and kind of went in different directions. Mm-hmm. And Silver Surfer being taken, whisked away to a far galaxy where these people want him to be their champion, and they've decided that he's agreed to do it, but they ended up asking him to hold some. They ended up, without telling him, holding someone dear to him hostage as collateral.
Well, I wouldn't be doing that with the Silver Surfer.
But he said, "Well, who have you kidnapped?" And he starts rattling off all these people from his past, and it's one of the twins. And he's like, "You got me. I don't know who that is." And it's really—it's got a really great sense of humor throughout it as well, which I think is great because Silver Surfer is often a very serious character in some depictions.
Like, oh, he's very deep.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's face it.
It's a man on a surfboard. It's a really ridiculous concept, but one of the things that makes him work, is the fact that he is so introverted, and
it's not one of Stan Lee's finest moments when he created that character, and most of his issues were dumb.
No, but
later on,
when Abnett and Lanning.
Yeah.
Had him. I mean, they just did amazing things.
Well, all throughout Annihilation, throughout those things, they were fantastic. And the last couple of runs were good. I mean, the only ones I've ever picked up, it was written by Stan Lee, but I love the one that's like a two-issue non-canonical one years ago that had Mobius's art on it. And that's the reason you get it, because Mobius doing Silver Surfer, you can imagine it's amazing. Yeah. But this issue's great. Again, I buy it for the art, but I'm going to stick around for the story because I love all things cosmic. The other one that came out this week, another new number one from Marvel, was Iron Patriot.
Now, I did read this and I was intrigued.
Yeah, this is something we talked about last week when we were saying, was it the last week or the week before when we were talking about Captain Marvel number one? Saying we didn't realize what he was up to because apparently he and Carol Danvers are an item now.
Yeah.
All this stuff. She's not in this issue, but there's obviously a whole lot of stuff that's happened in Iron Patriot's life that I was just completely unaware of.
Me too. And the idea that he's actually stopped being War Machine. He's given up basically the military. He's been sanctioned to move to being the Iron Patriot, to only working within the United States and to help people, not being a weapon of war.
He's decided he's just going to be domestic support.
Yeah. And of course, there are factions in the U.S. government who don't like this idea.
Well, in fact, it's not just factions in the U.S. government. It's external pressure on members of Congress.
Yeah, so intriguing. But it's also introducing us to a side of Rhodes that we never see, which is his family.
His family, yeah.
And in particular, his niece.
Niece, who's like a prodigy with mechanics.
She comes down and says, "Stop messing around with the armor."
Yeah,
and
she's got it in
just
the,
looking.
She's got it in the garage at the back, tinkering it, giving it new tech and stuff. It's quite clever. I actually quite like the dynamic. I think it works really well. It's something Marvel's done really well this year with their new characters. It's given all of their leads a real human element to it.
In fact, I will say that probably the strongest element of Iron Patriot is the relationship between him and his father, because there's that really judgmental...
Who looks like Lou Gossett Jr.
A little bit, yes. Yeah. And there's that whole judgmental side of it, which is you should be spending more time with family, you should be doing this.
Yes.
And Rhodes continually having to fight back against that father.
And even when his niece sort of says that, it's sort of like... don't you start to.
Yeah.
You know.
So
yeah.
It's an intriguing book. There's not a lot of action happening in this book. This is character driven stuff. And I'm sure there's going to be more action coming, especially the last couple pages.
Yeah. But this seems to be the mark of the all new Marvel now. Like, introduce us to the character and then build from there. It's a risky move because some people want, you know, stuff.
You're looking for a jumping
on
point to comics. This is what they're trying to give you. They're trying to give you entry points.
And I can honestly say I'm reading more Marvel comics than anything else right now.
Yeah, definitely.
While we're still on Marvel, let's quickly skip over to, I tried to read Avengers 27 and realized I thought I must have missed Avengers 26. I don't think I have. I just didn't understand what was going on.
Can I say the Avengers at the moment, and this is really sad for me because I was a mad, you
there's,
know.
There's
you
two
know.
Bruce Banners. Did I miss an issue? Was that in another series?
You know what an Avengers fan I was during the whole Golden Age and everything else. Avengers have kind of gone the way of the X-Men for me at the moment, which is I'm kind of over it. You know?
Which brings us to Guardians of the Galaxy, which you did read this week.
Which I did read because of the Guardians, not so much the X-Men, but it is the crossover with all new X-Men.
This is number 13. It was basically a whole lot of... They had some really good young Scott Summers moments towards the end of the issue where he's just basically telling Gladiator, look, back off.
I will kill you.
I will kill you. Earth is ours.
Yeah. And for him to do that to Gladiator, that's a bold move.
It's like, look who we've brought with us this time. If you come near Earth, I'm bringing all the X-Men. I'm bringing the Avengers, the Fantastic Four.
And he invoked the line when he goes, I'll bring the Hulks.
Yeah, and I'll bring the Hulks, It's awesome. Like, you know, and that sort of stuff's cool. There's a magical moment with Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
Brilliant.
In the middle of a snowy forest where Groot just starts playing with the trees and Rocket Raccoon's going, don't do it again.
Don't do the tree thing again.
We've spoken about this. And then a couple of actual raccoons come running out of the forest and Rocket's like, oh, for God's sake, put some clothes on. And there's just a little throwaway line just like, yes, and the girl who I've now suddenly realized is part of this ragtag team that's in here. It's like, you know, where do these people come from? It's like suddenly there's like all this crew in the middle of this one ship that's floating around. There's the Star Jammers in there. There's the X-Men.
I think Bendis may finally be getting his feet on this book.
I think he's been running these two books simultaneously, not quite sure of the direction of either of them, to be honest. And suddenly in bringing them together, he's given them both clear separate directions.
Correct. And I mean, the fact that he's brought the Star Jammers back into it and he's bringing Guardians. He's bringing the cosmic universe back into the fold, I think.
Into both the X-Men into
the Marvel universe in general. Yes. And I think he's...
Which is quite strategic given the next film that's coming.
Correct.
Out.
Well, given the whole next strategy of the films as well. And I think that Bendis was flailing. I know I'm a big Bendis fan, but he was flailing with both of these books. And I think he's finally started to get his feet. And it may actually even bring me back to all new X-Men.
Yes.
You know,
I'm going to keep reading because the next issue of All New X-Men is a big anniversary issue, and apparently the next issue of Guardians of the Galaxy is the 100th, which I think would include the Abnett and Lanning 25, plus the previous 90s run.
Well, it has to because there hasn't been 100, so
no,
it has to.
They do this a lot. Like Nova just did its 100th issue as well.
Yeah, which is kind of cheating because that book is not the Nova that we like.
No, but. While we're still on Marvel, cannot go without mentioning Hawkeye in a week that it came
out. Well, actually, not so much Hawkeye as the case.
Actually, no, it was a Kate issue. It was a Hawkeye number 18. Why is this book the greatest book ever? Like, it's just every week, every month that it comes out.
Do you know why? Because it just reeks of quirk.
Yeah.
And every week when you think you've got a handle on this book, he just takes you in a completely different place. And you sit there and go, okay, I'll just go on the ride with you.
And this issue was a whole tribute to The Long Goodbye. Yeah. There's an Elliot Gould character
and
in this
even
issue.
Looks like Elliot
and he's
Gould.
Trying to give away his cat throughout the whole thing. It's great.
No, it is great. And I have to say, I do prefer it when it's with Barton over Kate, which now it seems to be every alternate issue. That's the way he's doing it now.
I hope they keep doing that, though, because I like the two characters.
And I do prefer the Barton storyline, especially now that the whole Russian thing is starting to build up and the whole building.
Bro.
The entire building thing with him in the last issue where he may not have the rights to the building and they're basically invoking. So there's a lot happening there. And every time we cut back to Kate, I almost feel like, oh, get back to Barton, you know? But I think the Kate storyline is charming.
It is. I mean, because the whole color, because you get a completely different vibe in California.
I love her two gay neighbors.
Yeah. Well, now that she's in California, I want a crossover between that and Daredevil.
It has to come.
Yeah.
It has to come.
They're on the same coast now. Yeah. I reckon, this is me putting this out there. This may come to fruition, may not. West Coast Avengers.
Again, bring it back.
Bring it back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. Look, other couple of things that came out this week that I quite enjoyed. I checked out Blackout. Didn't really make it. It's a new miniseries from Dark Horse. Didn't make a huge impression on me, but I did enjoy Dark Horse's Serenity Leaves on the Wind, number 3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really enjoying that series. I was actually talking to some folks last night saying that, you know what, Firefly was good. I just don't think it's worth all the major hype around it. It was a good series, but it never got great. You know,
oh, I would argue it, but that's all right.
I know I'm the minority there, but I think it could have been more than what I was. But I'm really enjoying this because, and maybe it's just that I'm enjoying seeing these characters again. Tomb Raider number 2.
This is a series that I am dying to get started on, but I'm kind of letting it build up some steam.
Yes,
I want.
No, honestly, I think it is because we've both played its prequel through as one piece.
Yeah.
Reading the story sequentially like this is a bit weird. But it is Gail Simone, so I mean,
well, and that's the Gail Simone factor is the factor that is making me really excited about this book.
And there's some Gail Simone news coming up in the headlines as well. The other book that came out this month is the much, 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 much delayed Sandman Overture that number time. 2. And look, apparently the next issue, which is meant to be solicited for next month, is not going to come out next month. And they're now soliciting it as a sometimes book. Which is interesting.
We're doing a Kevin Smith here by the looks of it.
Which is it's hard because I'm almost tempted to kind of leave a couple because I actually sat down to read this week and I had to go back and get the first issue and read it again because I'd forgotten what had happened in the first book. And because Gaiman's narratives are so complex, it's kind of hard to keep something like that going, you know, every 3 months, you know, trying to remember what happened, particularly when I'm reading another, you know, dozen titles that I've just rattled off a week. Did you catch up on World's Finest this week?
Didn't yet. Once again, this is on my reading list, but with Captain America.
Because it's the big conclusion to the...
It is. I will be reading that. I'll probably be reading that tonight before bed, actually, because, you know, I've been hanging in... World's Finest is one of the few DC titles that I've been hanging in there with.
Yeah.
Purely because of Power Girl. The other thing I wanted to mention, though, speaking of DC, very quickly, is I finally caught up with the latest Supergirl, which the number has gone out of my head, but I think it is 29.
I think you're right.
I think it's last week it came out.
Yes.
They talk about a flailing storyline. Now that she's this Red Lantern, I don't think they know what to do with her.
Oh, look, anything with lanterns at the moment. I mean, look, the major lantern story is pretty good, but I don't know why there's like... The fact that DC have greenlit an Orange Lantern, a Red Lantern, a bunch of Green Lantern books, they've got their own little lantern universe there, and the core books are quite good, but I think...
I never thought Lafleur should have his own book.
Lafleur's got his own book.
Never understood why he has his own book. No. And the Red Lantern seemed to be all over the place at the moment. I think the Supergirl move is purely to bring interest back to Red Lanterns. But it's not that interesting. That's the problem. And I think it's because the problem is Red Lanterns don't talk. They growl and snarl and spit blood. And so what you've got is now you're trying to figure out why she's so angry, but all she's doing is snarling and spitting blood and growling.
Yeah. Except for Guy Gardner, who can still talk.
Oh, really? Well, there you go. So, so I don't know what they're doing with it, and I hope it ends soon, is all I'm saying.
The superior Supergirl.
Although I did this one line that I love where, and I always forget her name, the scientist who's at the Earth's core. What's her name with the cane?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever her name is. I love it. She goes, a Kryptonium with a red ring? This is an extinction level event.
I also note that there was a, from DC this week, there was an Amanda Waller one shot.
Oh, yes,
and
I saw that.
And I have to guess that was just to capitalize on her popularity from Arrow as well, that she's become a big focal point. Because the Arrow Amanda Waller is very much based on the New 52 version of it.
Very much so.
David, what do you reckon we should do some news headlines now?
Let's do it. Marvel will cross over every single Spider-Man in their roster for the Spider-Verse event in November from Dan Slott.
Speaking of Spider-Man, Peter David will return to Spider-Man 2099, or 2099 if you prefer, as that series reboots in July.
Gail Simone will make her first return to Marvel in over a decade with a story for Savage Wolverine.
Kelly Sue DeConnick will tackle Dark Horse's renewal of their Aliens comics with the company's first proper Aliens Predator Prometheus comics crossover this year.
That's a mouthful.
Mm.
Warner and DC Entertainment has announced its plans for this year's 75th anniversary of Batman, including two new shorts from Bruce Timm and Darwin Cook, and Batman Day on July 23rd. How will you celebrate?
being dark, no parents. Amy Acker has been cast as Audrey, the cellist that Coulson pines for on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Good choice. Lorenzo Semple Jr., the writer behind the 1960s Batman series, has died this week, age 91. He will be remembered.
And finally, the first teaser trailer for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie has dropped this week. It's time for one of our always fun trailer commentaries. What do you reckon, David?
I think so. Let's hit it. All right. Oh. Nicola.
Crime, violence, and fear have run rampant.
Crime.
Helicopter.
Oh, falling tower.
That looks exactly
thingy.
Like a shot from Amazing Spider-Man.
It does, actually, yeah.
Oh, Michael Bay.
Michael Bay, you know this can be quality now. White Shredder. People want heroes. Hey, it's Megan Fox.
Too much plastic surgery. Soldiers. Oh, turtles.
Hey, yellow jacket. She's wearing a yellow jacket.
But she hasn't got the red hair.
I know. I preferred her when she was a redhead. You know how I feel about redheads.
I know how you feel about redheads.
Well, New York shot there. Definitely looks like Amazing Spider-Man now. And it looks like Shredder is the one who created the turtles in this, which is
interesting. Well, remember, we still have that persistent rumor that the ooze is actually alien in nature.
And our first glimpse of the turtles proper. People have been raving about this scene where they crack down a Humvee with their shells, which is it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. They have gone with the title Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Not
but this
just...
this is TMNT. Yeah, this is my favorite scene from the trailer.
Whoa, chills. Just a mask. See? Don't freak out. Right?
Yeah, that's pretty cute.
The faces aren't quite right.
They don't have the beaks. You know how the turtles have snouts?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've got these kind of flat faces.
And they've got noses. They've got actual noses.
Yeah, yeah. So their faces are trying to look more human, which doesn't look quite right.
Because it's actually, now that trailer is just finished, I'm seeing like there's a cartoon version of it that's come up just in the corner there.
Mm.
And that's the classic turtles. Because you have to remember that we were raised on the 90s turtles. We're back when they were cartoon.
Absolutely.
And the Eastman Laird comics. Which
And the 80s movies.
Yeah.
With the Henson turtles.
I love being a turtle. I'm working my way through the Eastman Laird stuff at the moment. And I want to work. We're basically what we're going to do.
This is the early black and white stuff?
Yeah, except I'm looking at the color reprints at the moment. I'm working my way through to Return to New York, which is like the classic arc from that early period. And that's the one I want to do on the show. I think we're going to do that as a pick.
Closer
to the movie. And we're going to have a special guest on for that one who I've already lined up for that. So
very much looking forward to it. Cool.
Just think of if there's an Australian artist out there who you know works on Turtles comics.
Maybe I may know that one. Yeah, okay.
So, but look, you know, I don't really have an opinion there because I've never been a massive Turtles fan. Like, I mean, I liked the Turtles back in the day.
Interestingly enough, I was a fan of the cartoon. I was a fan of the movies. I never really got into the comic books. Not until much later.
No, agreed. And I at the time, I was reading comics at the time. But for some reason, it just didn't...
It passed me by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So go figure on that one. But I am looking forward to it. The other thing I'll quickly play before we get out of the news segment was, as you probably saw online and certainly on behindthepanels.net and therealbits.com, we put up some photos that... Avengers 8, or Dave's not here, so I'll have to do it for him. Avengers.
I'll do it. Age of Ultron.
Oh, it's just not the same,
no,
is
not.
It?
I'm sorry.
It is very late as well.
Yes, other people are all asleep in the house.
That's right. Avengers Age of Ultron is shooting at the moment. It's been shooting in Italy, and we've seen some amazing shots from that. And now they're about to shoot in South Korea. And Joss Whedon put out online a message to South Korea. For the good people there. And this is just a little clip from that.
I'm really grateful and excited to be filming in your city. We are going to mess it up a bit and inconvenience some people for a few days, and I apologize for that. I know what that's like. I live in Los Angeles. It happens to me all the time, and it's not fun. I hope that it will be worth it.
I'm sure it will be.
He's such a humble guy.
We're making a film. And it's
I'm sorry.
Just, yeah, I'm sorry about that. You might have heard of it. very much looking forward to that. If you have seen those photos, amazing, really clear shots of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in particular.
Mm.
And we also get to see Hawkeye's new outfit for the movie, which really looks very, very cool. And I'm hoping it means that Hawkeye is a much more prominent player in this. And
I think he may be.
And I'm secretly hoping. I'm not even secretly hoping. I'm telling you this on a podcast. I'm hoping that there's going to be a Hawkeye film, and if they don't base it on the Fraction stuff, there's no justice.
Well, there's
got to
be Pizza Dog, so you know.
I want a Pizza Dog film.
Yeah,
I want the Hawkeye cinematic universe. Clinton Barton will get a book. Kate Bishop will get get a film. Pizza Dog will get a film.
I think they'll bring
them all together in one.
I think if you do it right, you would put the Kate Bishop and the Clinton Barton stuff together, and you tell an intercrossing story over the two coasts.
Yes. Yep, yep.
You're cutting backwards and forwards between their two little worlds.
Oh, I'd love that.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be brilliant. There's also a persistent rumor that Evangeline Lilly has been cast as the Wasp.
I have heard this rumor going around.
So just while we're on movie news, that's been happening this week as well. I didn't put it in the news headlines. It's not confirmed by any way, shape, or form or means.
She'd make a good Wasp, though. I think
she'd make a good addition to the Marvel Cinematic U full stop. They've cast impeccably.
She
so
would
far.
Actually also be a good Spider-Woman.
Ah, Jessica Drew.
Mm.
See, I'm still not entirely sure whether or not Marvel have the rights to Spider-Woman. We don't know where she falls. I think anything Spider-hyphen is...
Although Drew is actually completely outside of Parker's world.
Because she was always... She was originally Hydra, wasn't she?
Hydra.
She was originally Hydra.
She was a Hydra agent, yeah.
So they could bring her in on that basis. They could... And certainly, without any spoilers here, certainly after the events of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, there's a lot of scope for more storylines with Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. They could either do that or bring her in just as Jessica Drew and then make her a hero later on.
Now, the other thing they could also do is if they do have the rights, they could also introduce her into, as Jessica Drew, they could introduce her into their Netflix universe.
Yes.
Because she is actually friends with Alias.
Jessica Jones.
Thank you, Jessica Jones. They're friends.
Yes.
So you could actually introduce her into that universe.
And she's also friends with...
Carol Danvers,
which, and they're talking about it in Ms. Marvel film. She's friends with Black Widow in the comics as well. And she's one of Clint Barton's exes.
That's correct.
So there's a lot of scope for bringing her in there as well.
Yeah, but the question is, does Sony have all Marvel Spider property wrapped up? Or does Marvel have some latitude there?
Because that'd be great if Marvel could do a film with Clint Barton and all of his exes.
Oh, well, that's a straight out of a Fraction storyline.
That's what I'm saying. You do that, and then Marvel kills two birds with one stone there and actually having a film where the three of its female leads feature prominently in their own storyline.
Although they've never actually introduced Mockingbird into the film universe yet.
No, but they could introduce her in that film.
Yeah, they introduce her, and then so for those who don't know the three X's,
there's been a lot of Hawkeyes.
It's Mockingbird, Jessica Drew, and Natasha
and Black Widow. Yeah,
and Natasha Romanoff are his three X's, and there's a wonderful set of issues where the whole issue is surrounded by each one coming to visit him and ending up slapping him for money.
Yeah. He doesn't take a lot of breaks, no. Clint Barton, but that's why we love him.
Yes.
Speaking of somebody else who didn't get a lot of breaks, it's time for our Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
Cool.
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the Pick of the Week.
The Lord said to Noah, there's going to be a floody. Lord said to Noah.
In the beginning, there was the Word, and the Word was No. Before filmmaker Darren Aronofsky could secure financial backing for his passion project Noah, he created this original graphic novel with Ari Handel and artist Nico Henrichsen. Reimagining the epic biblical tale as a post-apocalyptic nightmare, this is not your traditional Sunday school teachings. This is the son of Lamech kicking ass and taking two of every animal name. This is Noah.
right, no more Aronofsky films for you.
I gotta say, I love that Clint Mansell soundtrack.
Oh, the soundtrack's probably the best thing in the film, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But Mansell is—he excels at everything.
That's been one thing I've loved in every Aronofsky film. While we're on the topic, is the Clint Mansell. Yes. I must have played the Requiem for a Dream soundtrack over and over.
Well, and I think everybody has, and even if they don't know where it came from.
That's exactly right.
Because it's such an iconic, such an iconic track on that album, and they use it in television commercials and trailers, and people sit there and go, "That's amazing," and they don't know it actually came from Requiem for a Dream. Anyway, that's a whole different show. This is actually about Noah.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's why I was confused.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to say, because I actually went back. I did two things after I saw the film this week with you.
Right.
And
Were you there?
Yeah, I was there. Also, our good friend Dave Longo.
Yes, and he was there too.
We all had a good giggle afterwards and a few cups of tea. And then I went and read the graphic novel this week, and and that was, I thought, superior. And then after I read that, I went and read the relevant page and a half in the Bible, which this is one thing we have to say up front. This is a very, very, very small part of the Bible in its totality, yet has seemed to have spawned more stories than almost anything except for the Jesus story itself in the New Testament. Or perhaps Moses in Exodus, you know.
Yeah, and I find fascinating, I think probably the most fascinating thing about the Noah story is, I think in the Bible, correct me if I'm wrong, you just read it recently. Now,
this morning, in fact.
I read huge chunks of the Bible, most of the Bible, in fact, way, way, way back because I was researching.
Yes.
It wasn't because I was super religious or anything.
I went to a Christian brother's school, so there's that.
Well, yeah. I never actually studied. I never reread past. I couldn't quote it to you. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the Noah story is about four pages.
Not even.
It's
basically, it's chapters 6 through 9 of Genesis, if you're looking for it. And the story is literally Noah was a guy. God told him to build an ark because he was going to flood the earth.
Well, let's face it, God, in the Old Testament, in particular, the first few books of the Old Testament, God is bipolar. Yeah. And he literally goes, all man is good, all man is fine. Oh, no, I don't like you. Wipe you off the face of the planet. Let's start again. Old man is good. No, I don't like you. Wipe. And he does it literally.
Who is this really?
He literally wipes out, like the Tower of Babel. He literally wipes man out or gets mad at man several times over. And it's like he's there going, get a grip.
Now, before you write your letters in, I just want to tell you that I'm going to say will be something that you'll write letters in about. But
everything we're about to say is probably something you're going to write letters.
God comes off both in this book, in the Bible, in those passages, and certainly in the film, as a massive douche.
Yeah.
Because this is one of the weird things about this. It's not really seemed to be targeting people of faith because. There's no kind of like, yes, I'll trust in God kind of stuff because everything seems to be a God punishing this poor man until he gets to some.
What's interesting, though, about Aronofsky's take on it, both graphic novel and movie, is the fact that
it's Noah.
God doesn't do anything.
No.
The creator, as they call him, doesn't really do anything.
And in fact, there's these characters.
It's Noah's interpretation of what?
the characters that he introduces into this, in a way, he's created for this, the Watchers, which are these giant rock creatures. The basic story in this one is that they recap Genesis a little bit. Noah being a direct descendant of Adam. While the rest of humanity that sits out on the fringes are more or less descendants of Cain, who is the first murderer, as we know,
he was a descendant of Seth.
Seth,
yeah,
sorry, Seth. He was a descendant of Seth. Yeah,
they were all descendants of Adam.
Adam. Of course, everyone's a descendant of Adam.
He was a descendant of Seth.
That's right.
And the rest of mankind,
because it was Cain, Abel, and Seth. That's
correct.
Right.
And then Cain killed Abel. Yes, that way.
Yeah, Cain killed Abel.
Cain killed Abel, and then the rest of mankind is basically descendant from Cain.
Cain, yeah.
And they are all madmen, crazy people.
Yes.
And the sole heir of Seth is Noah.
And which is something really interesting I'll just point out right now, which is that the morality in both the graphic novel and the film is very black and white. You're either good and pious and completely obedient, or you're one of the wicked ones. There's no, and in Noah's mind that's the case as well. The character of Noah is painted as being very, very obsessed.
To the point of obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, and it's blind faith. And it's hard to say, I mean, Aronofsky's certainly not, and in this case, his co-writer Ari Handel, are not criticizing blind faith, because that faith is ultimately rewarded. It's not a book for the faithful. It's not a book. A lot of people will comment that the book and the film are a polemic on climate change, mm-hmm. or on any other form of thing, or you know, humans destroying the earth. The there's one sequence in the film that kind of makes it explicit, but in the graphic novel, you kind of get the idea, certainly from the structures that are around. This isn't, you know, ancient times. This is post-apocalyptic almost. This is the earth, the humans, our civilization now has passed, and this is way in the future where humans are so corrupt and decayed that God has no choice but to, or sorry, the creator has no choice.
There's no God mentioned.
There's no God. The creator has no choice but to wash it all out and start again. And that's, I think, really interesting. And I think one of the things that Aronofsky very much wanted to do with this was to set it in a period that could be way, way, way in the past or way, way, way in the future. Mm. And that's interesting to me because I like that take on it. I like that this is then just a fable. But then he gets very literal with it,
yeah.
I think. And I think that's the interesting. And one of the things that I've always had with some of these stories when they're taken literally is that when you take them to their literal logical conclusion, they don't make sense, and you can't, you know, use them as the actual creation story because, you know, I'm sorry, people, but, you know, science, which we have to bring in here, will say that if you've got five people, that ain't repopulating the earth.
No, but you know? I mean, that's the problem with the Bible in its entirety, though, is that, like, we base the story on Adam and Eve. All mankind comes from Adam and Eve. So they got real busy.
Mm.
You know,
and their children got
real busy with each other, and that basically is telling us that the entire biblical world is built on incest, which is a rough biscuit to swallow. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's like,
and the idea that two of each kind of animal and his small family are going to repopulate the entire world, you got to ask yourself, there's a lot of fornication between family members there that probably shouldn't be happening.
That's right. But I mean, the other thing that I thought was really interesting in this take on it, which is and let's face it, Aronofsky's take here is basically the Bible meets Lord of the Rings.
Mm.
Although one of the things that I did note, because the Watchers, who are basically fallen angels who have been trapped on Earth and
who in the comic book are actually portrayed as six-armed giants.
Yes, they're kind of like a Lord of the Rings-esque troll.
Yeah.
In the film, they're very much, they're trapped in the Earth and have just become rock creatures. Think the rock biter from Neverending Story. I actually think that's interesting because there is biblical a touchstone for that, which is when I was reading Genesis this morning, there is actually a line, in those days, there were giants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reference to it.
Term "the Watchers" is also used in the Bible as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you correlate the Watchers with the giants, we kind of piece it together.
And you were saying to me before that it wasn't just Genesis and it wasn't just,
well,
just the Bible
bring,
that Aronofsky
bring your,
based this
bring
on.
Your attention to a review of the film. So this isn't about the comic book. This is a review of the film. It was on IO9 and it's written by Annalie Newitz.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really interesting article because it basically is titled "Noah is the Best and Worst Bible Movie You'll Ever See." And it's a really deep, long analysis of what worked and what didn't in the film, what's based on, and so forth. And I'll let the listeners go and find this for themselves to read it. But what some of the key points in this that she raises is the fact that Aronofsky, because she actually mentions in the article at one point, so what Christians is this film for? And this is a very interesting point because it's not for Christians at all. Aronofsky is Jewish, and the Old Testament is Jewish fable. And the point that she actually raises in here is that a lot of the actual movie is based on the Talmud, which, as she pointed out, is kind of like the Cimmerillion for the Bible, which is stuff pre-Bible.
I should point out, though, that the Noah, the flood story, the creation story, is actually common to a lot of religions.
Well, no, it is, and it's actually the Muslim faith as well.
That's right.
He had a different name though. It's Neh or
something like that. But there is that flood story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the Jesus story is also common
And Moses is actually Moses half and
so
forth. Yeah.
So they all have a common grounding. But the point she's making is that it's not just the Bible. Aronofsky has borrowed from all these different sources and pieced together his own idea. And then, of course, he has introduced the allegory of climate change, and he has introduced the allegory of looking after our world and saving the animals and all these other things. But he's mixed these all together in this kind of, and I know, because I didn't like the film very much, but I quite liked the book, and I'm going to say he kind of mixed it into this delicious fantasy where he kind of went, this is all this stuff, yeah, and let's kind of mix it together and turn it into just a fantasy epic.
Which is what both this graphic novel and the film ultimately are, because as we said, the film, which a lot of you will have seen this week.
And the film doesn't quite, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't quite make it.
No. One of the
but
things,
the book does.
This book has got some amazing sequences in it. The whole notion of him building the ark, the animals gathering, that's all represented in the film. But how he relates to the animals and what ultimately becomes the symbiotic relationship with the animals in the graphic novel is not represented as well on film. In fact, on film, he's represented very much as a homicidal maniac.
And I was going to say, his descent into madness in the second half of the story, let's put it the story.
Well, actually, put it this way, my friend Alex, hi, Batrock, if you're listening, he doesn't listen,
He
should listen. He leant over to me halfway through the film and was like, it's turned into The Shining.
Well, it has, and that's the problem with Russell Crowe's interpretation of it and the way that the structure of the film is he just kind of goes mad. Mm. Whereas in the book, there is a sense of him getting more and more frustrated. It's like he's doing everything he's told to do. He believes, because remember, the creator has never directly spoken to him. The creator gives him visions and he interprets those visions. And then he does an action, and if there's a reaction to it, he goes, oh, that must be the way to go. So when he's on the boat and he's trying to do things the same way, his family are starting to revolt. They basically are seeing, they're basically looking at it going, this is kind of a one-way trip and we're not real happy about it all of a sudden. And so they're starting, and he starts to get frustrated because they don't have the same belief he does. No. They don't have the same conviction that he has. And it starts to unravel on him. And I think that's what's really interesting to read in the book, is that his world is unraveling and he keeps going up and saying, will you talk to me? Will you tell me what to do? And ultimately, I think both the film and the book answer that question really nicely, which is, it's for him to make the decision. Yes. God chose him.
Yeah, which still gives you that free will element.
That's right.
As well.
So it's like God chose him and said, this is what I want you to do. Now you decide.
And which is interesting, when you get into something like evolution in here as well, this very much supports the whole notion of guided creation or guided evolution.
Yeah.
The notion that there was life, the sea was teeming with life, it came onto land, it grew into apes. And then the creator made man.
Yeah, and then he kind of, in the film I kind of went, Aronofsky wussed out.
But he wussed out in here as well, in this graphic novel. It's exactly the same scene. In fact, it's done exactly the same way.
And it also makes you think that this is the first thing he wrote.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's kind of like I'm trying to appease both camps there, which is one of the main issues with both this and the film, is that I'm not quite sure who the audience is.
Yes.
One thing I'll say about this, I mean, there's a lot of missed opportunities in the film that are in this graphic novel, which make it a great read. And we should say this is actually a great read.
Yeah, I got to say, I actually really liked the graphic novel. I wasn't keen on the film. Really liked the book.
There's one scene in this graphic novel, and you were describing it to me over here, and I agree with you, which is when he actually uses the assembled animals as his army, almost. And that's such a kick-ass scene.
Yeah, well, we should say, they answer one of those nagging questions of the Noah story, which is, of course, how the hell do you keep all these animals in one place and keep them alive as well and feed them and clean up after them and all this? Aronofsky's answer to that is quite simple. Noah is considered a mage. He's considered, and that's one of the things I like about the book, which the film doesn't go into at all.
No.
In the book, they keep referring to him as the mage.
Yeah, he actually goes into town.
He goes into town, they say, it's the mage. You know, yeah. It's like, so he obviously knows alchemy and he knows chemistry and he knows
he's the descendant of Methuselah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so he basically whips together a potion which puts the animals to sleep. Mm. And so, and this is in the film as well, where they whip together the gas and they basically put all the animals to sleep so that they're in like a stasis.
Also, basically. I think they invented the world's first home pregnancy test.
Yes. which used blood, which was kind of rough. But anyway.
Yeah.
Also, interestingly enough, in the book, Noah administers that test.
Yes. And it's the wife.
In the movie, it's the wife. And yeah. they keep trying to keep it all secret. So Noah is obviously a bit of a mage when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And he wakes the animals for that moment that you're talking about. And that's yes. what's so amazing about it. It's like you see him with his little, with his smoke. Mm. And then in the next scene, the son's going, you can't come in, you can't come in, you can't come in. And suddenly he's surrounded by these animals. Yeah. And you just go, awesome.
Yeah. These are my army boys.
Yeah. yeah. There's that one shot of the rhino running into the
yes,
sun.
Yes, I love that. That is such a magnificent. You know, scenes like that, missed opportunities. You know, it's very close to this graphic novel. We should talk about the art.
Oh, the art's beautiful.
Which is magnificent. I mean, yeah. this is, if you're going to do any sort of biblical tale, this is the art.
And what I love about the art in this is also, once again, that point that you made about it's kind of timeless. Mm. You don't know whether it's the far future or whether it is the past and so forth.
Nico Henrichsen is the artist on this, by the way.
Right from page one, there is a sense of almost science fiction to the artwork.
Look, even the kind of like these remnants of what looks like the space jockey ship from Alien, almost kind of stretching across the sky. These giant towers in the civilization that look like these ancient future towers. Like it's almost as though, that the civilizations progress to a point and then these are the ancient decaying ruins of civilization we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
and I do like that timeless nature of the book. The film doesn't quite succeed this well.
Because you don't see the humans much beyond Ray Winston running around the forest. You know, you don't see them beyond that. Here you get a sense of the world that and it's probably a budget thing. But,
of course, I think it's very much. I mean, $160 million.
It wasn't quite. I think it was between $130 and $160 they spent on the film. And a lot of that would have been on the animals and the practical building of like some of the arc sets look practical, which would have been huge. And, you know, even so, we've got to say the special effects in the film are lacking.
Well, they're would be patchy. Hard. They're
patchy.
Yeah.
Other scenes, I've got to say, though, are magnificent. Mm. There are bits of this film which are just jaw-dropping and, you know, it's playing in IMAX, so definitely, you know, if you're keen and you can afford it.
And it's playing IMAX and it's only 185, so it'll look magnificent on that big screen. Fill that big screen.
So if you can afford the IMAX tickets, which here in Australia are ridiculous.
If you mortgage your house, you can go see it
at IMAX. It's probably not worth mortgaging your house, but this comic is worth an investment.
Well, comic is available in comic books. We saw it in King's the other day. It's well worth having a look
at. We're all good books and we're all bad books sold as well. Definitely go and check this out. It's not Comics 101 by any means, but it's a damn good read. It's a good proper epic book. It's about 230 pages or something.
I think it's 260 something pages.
Oh, there you
actually.
Go.
Yeah.
So it's quite a lengthy read. Mm.
But it flies by.
As I said, that the Genesis story is a page and a half. Mm. But Aronofsky did all that research into other things as well, and he's really...
It's a pet project of his, you can see.
Well, apparently, since he was 13, he's been obsessed with the story, and he started making films just so he could ultimately make this the story. I mean, this graphic novel came out of it the same way that a graphic novel came out for The Fountain.
Right.
You know, that he was having trouble getting people to understand where he wanted to go with it. So he made this graphic novel to kind of say, this is what I want to do. These are my storyboards, almost in a way. And The Fountain had mixed results. But you could see that kind of similar thinking throughout that ends up in here as well. It's a kind of slightly – I would have liked a little bit more of that psycho mystery in there, sort of transcendental, you know, notions of
I would like Noah to have been
existentialism, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think the problem I had with both the book and the film, particularly the film, but I think I wanted Noah to be a little bit less conflicted. Because I mean, the thing is, I mean, in the original Noah story, he is a pious man. He is a kind man. You know, it's like
he's a kind man,
and he's not.
What are we gonna do now, man?
I don't think he's ever, from memory of that story, I don't think he is ever portrayed as crazy.
And I don't he hasn't in the previous ones. I mean, like, the whole notion's crazy. Mm. Like, you know, you got to imagine.
But he's doing the will of the Lord, you know?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about this is that they never, because he never explicitly speaks to, like, you know, we heard those clips from Bill Cosby at the start.
Classic sketch, by the way. 1963. Go listen
terrific,
to it.
Yeah. Just how many cubits? you know, the whole notion that God was speaking directly to him is like, yeah. I'm the voice of God. This is what you must do. And that's how it's classically portrayed. Here, because he has a vision, which is basically a dream, where he's drowning and he sees animals and all that sort of thing. He assumes from that, yep, the world's going
to
get
I love it.
Up.
His wife says to him, did he speak to you? And he goes, I think so.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. I think I've got to build an ark.
Yeah.
And that, I thought that was really interesting. And that's an interesting dynamic. So you never quite know whether he's crazy kind of thing, you know. But, you know, ultimately, I think that the film doesn't work because of its conflicted narrative and its refusal to pick a side.
Yeah.
The graphic novel works a little bit better because it's just really kick-ass in scenes.
Yeah.
Check it out if that sounds like your sort of bag, but we've got to start wrapping things up. I do have one little bit of feedback this week.
Cool.
So let's call on...
We're going to, through the miracle of post-production, you're going to hear the girl from Ipanema start right about now.
Sounds really good. We are having a lot of sound problems here tonight, people. But we actually got a message from regular listener Nancy La, who wrote in to ask us about Laramie Taylor's book.
Ah, okay.
In fact, said, cheers for the mention on your podcast the other week. That was pretty cool. Just got to ask you for a comic book question. I've checked out A Voice in the Dark as recommended in your podcast. And would like to know where I can pick up volume 2 and 3 if you have any sources. I've tried several places here in Sydney and they don't have it. I'm not sure if you have any other stores. I much prefer to get them as the paperback. I'm not sure if there's a term for that, but at a loss for the technical term for it. I'm not quite sure into the digital aspect. I'm not quite into the digital aspects yet. If you have any info where I'd be able to buy it, that'd be awesome. Thanks for your recommendations. I've been checking out Batgirl as per your recommendations and loving it. On to volume 2 now. Again, love the podcast. Jelly that you guys Jelly that you guys have watched Cap already. So not fair.
I agree.
I got stuck on Jelly there and then I realized it was short for jealous.
Yeah. But I completely agree. I'm very jealous that they got to see Cap before me.
No, but you still get to see Cap before everyone else.
That That's true. I'm seeing it tomorrow.
I'm jelly now. Because I want to see it again. Now, one of the things about that is that, Laramie Taylor's books, I think, are only out in singles at the moment. If there's a trade paperback out, forgive me, Laramie. I think I know it's been solicited.
I'm sure Laramie will write to us.
Right,
now.
Just let us know.
Yeah.
Because I think issue 5 has just come out, and I'm pretty sure that's the first arc is finishing up around there. And apologies to Laramie because I didn't get, he's emailed me this week and I haven't gotten back to him, but. His issue 5 came out and I've just been incredibly busy and haven't written anything yet, but we gave it a plug on last week's show. And we'll always give Laramie a plug. The book, great book, and he sent me some pictures of a very hairy man and an action scene that he's done for some upcoming issues, and I'd like to think somewhere that the hairy man's based on me, but I don't think it is. He's not.
I think we should send him photo references and he can put us in his book.
Oh, that's what we should do. Yeah, totally. So Laramie, if you're keen, I'll send you a shirtless photo of me. Stick in one of your upcoming books. Let's try and make it flattering. Look, to find the other things, I'm just going to suggest that you, if you still want physical copies of them, Nancy, go up online if you can't find them in the local stores. Mm. There's a lot of places that sell them online. I would start with laramietaylor.com.
That's a good point. Or have a look at the online stores for King's Minotaur.
Those sorts of things. If King's didn't have it in stock when you went there, then they might have it online. But
Minotaur
might
though. So
yeah, Minotaur might. A lot of the Australian ones, a lot of the Australian comic book stores will have online stores. Failing that, I have a lot of success with US ones, and the shipping's quite reasonable if you're buying a few things.
And funnily enough, a great source of comic books is eBay.
eBay is a great source of comic books. I really like a place called mycomicshop.com. That's why I buy a lot of stuff, and you'll see it advertised in all the single issues. Also, of course, Mile High Comics.
Yes.
I've been going for years. Chuck Rosansky is pretty much a geek god. Between that and pottery, it's comics and pottery. He just like, you get emails. If you start buying things from Mile High Comics, you'll get a weekly email. It's like, yep, just bought 5 tons worth of comics and we've restocked the warehouse. He's got probably one of the biggest private collections of comics in the world. And he's a fixture at American cons.
Well, he was featured in the
that documentary about, yeah. About not Oz Comic Con, about Comic Con.
Yeah, Comic Con Fans Hope or whatever it's called. The what's his name with the mustache?
Yeah.
It's getting late.
Morgan Spurlock.
Morgan Spurlock's documentary. Thank you.
Also should mention, speaking of Oz Comic Con, we're giving away tickets to the Adelaide show on our website at the moment. We just gave away two tickets, two double passes to Perth for this weekend that we're recording. And we had a very, very excited winner email me back saying, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going. Thank you so much. We're doing that. We're going to do that for every city. We're giving away double passes for every city. But at the moment, we're focusing on Perth and Adelaide. So if you haven't already, go check out behindthepanels.net and entry form there for the Adelaide show. That closes this week. So get your entry in before the middle of the week and I will let winners know via email. We've already had a really great response to that. So excellent. Thank you. Until now, we've gone a little bit over this week, but I think it's just excitement, really. About Noah.
Dear. And here it is, like, me thinking that Longo was the one that was making us go.
Go Longo, yeah.
Go Longo.
When we're going to go out this week, we'll go out on a little tune I found online, which was this week on the BBC. Hugh Jackman did a bit of a musical version of Wolverine.
This is bizarre.
Based on a song from Les Mis, which is quite strange. So I won't keep you too far from that. Suffice it to say that next week we will be doing, of course, Captain America the Winter Soldier film special. And with any luck, David Longo will be recovered and back in the studio with us.
I hope so.
To talk about that in depth. We've both spoken about it a little bit before on last week's show, but... we'll definitely get deep under the covers with Cap next week. Until then, you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. Pretty much I'll plug everything I do on there. Or hit up therealbits.com. That's the RELBits.com. Or, of course, behindthepanels.net.
And you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh or at geekactually.com, the host of the show. So,
and if you want to send us any feedback, send it to feedback@behindthepanels.net. You can go to facebook.com and look for Behind the Panels. Or, of course, if you really want to help us boost our show, go to iTunes, look up Behind the Panels and leave a rating or review on there for us. We really, 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 really appreciate it. It takes 2 seconds out of your life. It means the absolute world to us. So until next time, I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm Dave McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.
Who am I? Am I a superhero with some claws? Or just an actor searching for applause? Wolverine has all the fans, but what about me, Hugh Jackman? Who am I? I play the Wolfman, yes, it's quite the task. In X-Men Days of Future Past, there's the plug. I'm at the gym doing weights each day. Hugh has got to look buff, they say. Must I lie? I cannot eat this ice cream anymore. I need a body people can adore. I gave up junk food, that I know. I made that bargain long ago. And all my snacks and crisps, they're gone. And now this Wolverine can go on.